Hi folks, this is Bob Main. I'm your host of the Handgun World show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thank you for tuning in. It's Monday, October 12th. This is episode number 8 of the Handgun World show. And if you are a first-time listener, I want to welcome you and let you know that this show is about the practical ownership and use of firearms, more specifically, handguns. And we don't get into a lot of technicalities here. In other words, you're probably not going to hear me talk too much about how to accessorize your AR-15 or how to make your 1911, you know, real tactical and things like that. So not a lot of technicalities on terminal ballistics and so forth. I like to keep this show practical. And then what I mean by that is how to effectively shoot handguns, how to effectively select them, how they impact our lives, positive and negative. And sometimes if there's some negative things come up, I'll talk a little bit about them too. I wouldn't do this show if I wasn't a huge proponent of the Second Amendment and believe that the Second Amendment saves lives. I do believe that. However, there are times where there are some real idiots in the that own firearms, and they do some pretty idiot things. So every once in a while, I'll point those things out. Today's show is going to be pretty positive, and the title of today's show is called Get a Handgun, Save a Life. And it's based on an article that I read, and when you look at the notes of today's show posting, you will see a link to the article where I got a lot of this information called Get a Handgun, Save a Life. In the Washington Examiner recently, there was an article, and I'm going to talk to you about a true event that happened less than a month ago where a handgun saved a life. And so when I read this, I thought, okay, this has got to be part of episode number 8. Now, a couple of announcements that I'd like to get out of the way real quickly. The main website is www.handgunworld.com. And some of you might know me already because I'm also the host and the producer of today's survival show. And if you're into survivalism and self-sufficiency, you might want to go to todayssurvival.com and check out my show on that. But this website, obviously, and this podcast, handgun-related, handgunworld.com. And by the way, I'm always open to comments. So the next announcement that I want to make is whatever comments you have, please put them on the blog. I don't care whether they're positive or negative comments. I like constructive criticism, and I like this show to be as beneficial for you as possible. I consider this your show. So let me know how I can improve it, or if I've been inaccurate about something, or if I've forgotten to cover something, please let me know. The only thing I ask when you place a comment is just have some good facts to back it up. So in other words, if you say I'm inaccurate about something, set me straight, please. Give me the real facts. Tell me where I went wrong. If you just want to put an opinion on the blog, that's fine too. I like opinions because that fodders good conversation. And so I want to encourage you. And you'll see at the bottom of the posting a comments section. So that's it. That's the announcements, and let's dive right into the main topic called Get a Handgun, Save a Life. This is an article written by Gregory Kane, who writes for the Washington Examiner. The date of this article was September 24th. The date of the incident that I'm going to talk to you about is September 15th, 2009. So it happened less than a month ago, and it's a story about a gentleman named John Pontalillo. I think I said that right. I hope I didn't mispronounce that, but forgive me if I did. John Pontalillo. John basically used a samurai sword. One slash of a samurai sword, and he made a really good case. for the private ownership of handguns. Now, you might be thinking, are you kidding me, Bob? You know, are you off your rocker? How can a samurai sword make a good case for the ownership of a handgun? Well, let me explain. John Pontalillo is a student at Johns Hopkins University in Maryland. And on September 15th, here's what happened. He was one of many students that bust their butts every day at Johns Hopkins just trying to get a good education. And as you know, if you know anything about Johns Hopkins, it's one of the most academically competitive campuses. It's one of the toughest colleges in the country to get a degree from. And this poor guy, Mr. Pontalillo, just went from being an average college guy to being the center of attention. What happened was he basically slashed a burglar in the back of a house that he was renting with some other college students. He was, you know, when I was in college, I was in a house, I think we had seven other students besides me. It was a huge place. And he was probably in a place like this, maybe not quite seven, I'm not sure. But some dirtbag tried to burglarize this house full of college kids where he was staying at Johns Hopkins. And the only thing that Mr. Pontalillo had to defend himself was a samurai sword. And so that's what he used at the time, and he slashed the burglar right in the back of the house, backyard of the house. Now, the way the story goes is he took his sword out to defend himself after the burglar lunged at him. The perpetrator came after him. And basically, he nearly severed off the burglar's left hand with the sword, and he pierced the guy's chest. The end result is the attacker bled to death before the paramedics could arrive. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the burglar in this case. The alleged burglar, as the writer of the article says, and I guess maybe this whole thing isn't quite solved and sorted out yet. It might be a little bit too soon. But this, the name of the burglar, whose name I'm going to give you in a minute, had 20 arrests on his record. And I'll put a link to the website that tells you a little bit about this man's record as well. The perpetrator's name was a guy named Donald Rice. Donald Rice, he was 49 years old, and he'd been charged many times over the years with assault, resisting arrest, drug possession, and theft. Real model citizen, huh? Yeah, just the kind of person that we all want our kids to grow up to be like. So 49-year-old Donald Rice, in August of last year, apparently went bonkers. He went nuts. And I guess he just went on a spree, a crime spree. And the Baltimore County Police say that they charged him with 28 offenses stemming from one single incident. Okay? And they don't get detailed about what those charges were, but he was charged with 28 offenses in one incident. And most of the charges ended up getting dropped. That's an interesting thing to think about. I wonder why. Maybe I can do some research and find that out. But Mr. Rice ended up serving 6 months anyway, and he'd only been out of prison for 3 days. Okay, 3 days when he met his tragic death in the backyard of college student at Johns Hopkins University, John Pontalillo. But Mr. Rice, the perpetrator, was a troublemaker. And apparently he wasn't a real well-thought-of type of guy either. Apparently he was from Montgomery, Alabama, and this is how his pastor, listen to this, this is how the man's pastor eulogized him at his funeral. The pastor said, he lived a trifling and useless life. He walked around Montgomery daring someone to slit his throat. Last week, somebody obliged him. Of course, he's referring to Mr. Pontalillo at Johns Hopkins. He lived like a dog. He died like a dog. Undertaker, claim the body. Now, I want you to remember what I just said about this guy's record and about even what his pastor thought of him, because there's another point to this story besides just the handgun saving the life. There's another point to this, and I want to see if it's something that comes home to you when I talk about it. Now, apparently, there's some idiots out there at a newspaper called the Baltimore Sun that also decided that the perpetrator was also a victim. and they decided to write about it. They decided to write about their story. Now, again, and these are the pinheads here that often make those of us who own guns, they give us a bad name. See, this is what really hacks me off. This is one of the reasons why I do this show. What I'm about to share with you right now is just really ticks me off, and it's why I decided to create the Handgun World Show. The Baltimore Sun wrote an editorial, and they were upset over the killing that took place. And here's what they said. They said, even burglars don't deserve to be killed with a razor-sharp sword. You believe that? Now, in my opinion, that begs the questions. What in the heck exactly do burglars deserve to be killed with? I mean, give me a break. See, these are the kinds of mealy-mouthed, I don't want to say liberals because I don't want this to be a political show, okay? But I got to tell you that 95% of the people that think this way, that want to victimize the criminals, 90% of them are real mealy-mouthed, touchy-feely, liberal-type people that just don't get it. What exactly do burglars deserve to be killed with? You know what? If you're going to burglarize someone's home, I don't care if it's a college student like Mr. Pontalillo at John Hopkins University, or if you're burglarizing a family with kids. You got to understand something, dirtbags out there. In a lot of states, you're going to be met with a homeowner that believes in defending themselves, and if they have the opportunity, they're going to send you out of their home with nothing in your hand, and you're going to be horizontal. In other words, you're going to be dead. We have a right to defend ourselves in this country, and if I have international listeners, and you are listening from a country that does not allow the ownership of guns, I'm sorry about that. But here in the United States, in most parts of the country, we have that right. And we have the right to repel idiots like this criminal, Mr. Rice, from terrorizing our homes and terrorizing our family. So, did this guy deserve to be killed? Well, apparently he didn't stop what he was doing. And that's why this college kid had to use a sword and cut him to death. You know, maybe if the guy would have chosen not to do it at all, or even if maybe he would have stopped, I would imagine that there's a lot more to this story. I'm going to bet, just because I read about a lot of things like this, I'll bet that this college student asked this guy to stop. You know, tried to stop this guy from doing what he was doing, and the man wouldn't stop. So he grabbed the only weapon that he had at his disposal, which was a sword, and he used it. And good for Mr. Pontalillo. I say way to go. You know, you did what you had the right to do. You protected yourself. And you used whatever weapon that you had at your disposal to do it. So great. But I want to ask whoever wrote the editorial at the Baltimore Sun, just what do burglars deserve to be killed with? This is a clear and classic example of what I call libthink. All right, I'll just let you ponder what libthink is. And here's what I mean by libthink. And maybe I ought to call it something different, all right, because, you know, I've got some liberal friends that believe that it's, they believe in the Second Amendment, and they believe, in fact, many of them shoot with me in my IDPA league. And but politically, they are actually of liberal persuasion. So I'm not going to go ahead and throw everybody who thinks liberally into the same big pot here. But a lot of them think that it's okay for the criminals to be armed, but it's not okay for the citizens to be armed. And I'm serious. That's a hidden message that a lot of them send. You know, I mean, it's kind of a criminal's job description to be armed, right? But when you ask him, well, can law-abiding citizens be armed to defend themselves? Oh, no, you know, perish the thought, we can't have that. I don't get that thinking. To me, that's just madness. You know, I mean, I think you've heard this term thrown around many times, but it's so true. If you outlaw guns, then only outlaws are going to have guns. We see that in so many parts of the world today. We see that in so many gun-free zones, even in the United States, where there's gun-free zones. Where do you think the criminals show up? Where do they go to do their dirty work? Where would you go? You know, think about it. I mean, wouldn't you want to go where you're probably going to have the least amount of chance of somebody shooting back at you? Criminals like the path of least resistance. More often than not, that's what the scenario is. Now, let's play this same story. Let's play this scenario out that happened back on September 15th with Mr. Pontalillo. Let's play this whole thing out, and let's suppose that he would have been armed. All right? And let's say he would have been armed with not just a samurai sword, but let's say he would have been armed with a handgun. Would Mr. Rice, the perpetrator, you think he would have been so quick to lunge at Mr. Pontalillo if Mr. Pontalillo was holding a handgun? Or you think he would have turned tail and skedaddled right the heck out of there? And that is what criminals tend to do when they're confronted with a gun-toting, law-abiding citizen about ready to blow their head off if they come one step closer. It's called the element of surprise. And I've talked about this before. I've talked about this in my survival show, and I've talked about this on some of the other Handgun World episodes. Once the perpetrator sees that you are armed, Masoud Ayoub, the very famous law enforcement and handgun instructor, also has written articles about this. Once they see that you're armed with a handgun or any kind of a firearm, they do skedaddle out there, and they put that tail between their legs, and they hightail it, and they start running. Because that's what a lot of these criminals do. They are cowards. Okay, so again, picture this. Mr. Pontalillo, the victim, says to Mr. Rice, the perpetrator, "Mr. Rice, I'd like you to meet two of my very good friends. They're some of the best friends I've had. They are esteemed Americans, Mr. Smith and Mr. Wesson. You might want to stay put until police arrive. Otherwise, my two buddies could get pretty mean." And I think probably Mr. Rice would have done just that, or he would have fled. The bottom line is, the perpetrator, hear me carefully, the perpetrator, Mr. Rice, he'd be alive today to tell the story. He wouldn't have been killed by the samurai sword, quite likely, because he probably would have stopped his act once he noticed that his victim had a gun. So here's a way that private ownership of guns can actually save lives. And it could have saved Mr. Rice's life, who was the perpetrator. Okay, so here's a situation where I think it's quite likely that there would not have been anybody killed in this matter. I think the perpetrator would have fled, like most of them do. He'd be alive today. And so that's the life that would have been saved had the homeowner had a handgun. So to everybody out there who thinks that guns kill that guns kill people and that guns kill the wrong people, I submit to you this story. For all you lib thinkers out there that feel sorry for the criminal and feel sorry for the fact that his life got taken as well, let me say this. This criminal that you feel sorry for, he might be alive today if the homeowner would have presented him with a gun. Because he probably would not have carried through with his vicious act and been stabbed to death by the owner's sword. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that an interesting twist of events and an ironic end to that story? It's a true story, folks. This happened less than a month ago. Now, this isn't just my opinion that I'm injecting here. Let me also tell you about a guy named Gary Kleck. Gary Kleck is a criminologist at Florida State University, and he's done a lot of extensive research. And what he's found is that Americans use firearms over a million times a year to defend themselves. And Mr. Kleck makes some pretty good points in a lot of his studies. And according to a book that he's written called The Seven Myths of Gun Control, he's found in his research that in 98% of those 1 million cases where citizens used a gun to defend themselves, in 98% of them, no shots were fired. The criminal fled at the mere sight of a gun. So it's not just me spouting off, you know, Bob Main opinion on the Handgun World show here. These are people who study this for a living also saying the same thing. So, lesson for Mr. Pontalillo, the college student at Johns Hopkins University. Give up your samurai sword. Put that sword on the wall and use it as a conversation piece and go buy yourself a handgun, because handguns actually save lives. Now, let's talk some more facts here. Now I want to do some myth busting. I love doing myth busting. This information that I've got to share with you comes from gunowners.org, the website gunowners.org. And I'll put a link to this website in the show notes as well, so you can reference that. But listen to this, a fact sheet on how guns save lives. The first fact is that guns are used 80 times more often to protect the lives of honest citizens than they are used to take lives. And of the 1 million citizens every year that use guns to defend themselves, the overwhelming majority merely show their gun or fire a warning shot to scare off their attackers. Less than 8% of the time, a citizen will kill or wound his attacker. Now, I do want to make a comment about that, though, when it comes to brandishing your weapon. It's not something I'm a real big fan of and not something I'm a big proponent of. If I'm not mistaken, in most states, it's illegal. You cannot, as a deterrent, just lift your shirt up and show them the concealed handgun that you have on your inside your waistband and say, and use that as a message to say, you better get out of here, jerk, or I'm going to shoot you. If you draw that weapon out of your holster, you had better have a good reason for using it, or you are going to be charged with a crime of brandishing your weapon. Okay? So let me put that disclaimer on there. But if your life is threatened, and here's what this fact is trying to say, is that in most cases, when the gun is taken out of the holster, and the law-abiding citizen intends to use it to defend their life, 80% of the time, shots don't even have to be fired. Okay, just the sight of it usually makes criminals stop what they're doing. Now, another fact, as many as 200,000 women use a gun every year to defend themselves against sexual abuse. So to all you gun haters out there, why would you want to take the right away from a couple hundred thousand women every year to defend themselves against the dirtbags out there that want to commit sexual assault? Why would you want to do that? I don't understand the thinking of some of the bone brains that want to restrict gun ownership. It's just mind-boggling. Even the anti-Clinton researchers concede that guns are used, you know, a million times a year in self-defense. According to the Clinton Justice Department, it's exactly what their Justice Department put out. They confirmed those findings. Here's another fact. Armed citizens kill more crooks than do the police. That's why I start off this show by asking the question, why do I carry a gun? Well, because I can't carry a cop. Citizens shoot and kill at least twice as many criminals as do the police every year. Statistics are about 1,500 or so criminals every year. Approximately 1,500 criminals are shot by citizens. Slightly over 600 are shot by police every year. Okay? Think about that one. Now, handguns. Here's another fact. Handguns are the weapon of choice for self-defense. Citizens use handguns to protect themselves more than three times as many times every year as they do a long gun, a shotgun, or a rifle. Now, this is why I called this the Handgun World Show. This is why my extreme affinity lies with handguns. They are normally going to be what you have at your disposal most of the time to defuse the situation. You know, all these internet commandos out there and these people that want to have all these nice high-powered rifles and everything, that's good. I'm not saying you shouldn't have them. And I would fight furiously to protect the rights of every citizen to own firearms. No, don't hear the wrong thing. I'm not saying that people shouldn't own AR-15s and AK-47s. I have one. Okay, but the likelihood of you having to use a firearm like that, this is based on statistics. This is not Bob Main opinion. This is crime facts, and this is facts about the incidents that occur each and every day. It's highly unlikely that you're going to be able to retrieve your shotgun or your rifle or even have the need for it. Kind of tough to conceal those anyway, right? And what happened, I mean, if a crime happens in your house, you might have a better chance of getting to your shotgun, maybe. Although I think if you place the handgun properly, you can place it in a very safe spot in your house, inside a safe. There are plenty of safes out there. Gun Vault's one of them, that give you very, very easy and quick access to your loaded handgun, and also keep it out of reach from people that shouldn't be touching it. I still think in many cases your handgun in the Gun Vault safe is going to be easier to get and use than your shotgun or your rifle. And the statistics prove that. Now, the next fact is quite startling. Of those million or so people that use a handgun to defend themselves, approximately 500,000 of them defend themselves while they're away from home. And this is the point I just made, while they're away from home. How do you carry a concealed rifle or shotgun with you? And I would imagine that probably it happens on the streets. It doesn't necessarily happen in people's vehicles. Most of those 500,000 that are defending themselves with a gun, I'll bet you it's probably happening on the streets and not in cars. Now, you know, here in Texas where I live, you can carry a long gun loaded in your vehicle. There's nothing illegal about that. But again, you know, I think it's going to be very hard in a situation that might be over and done with in 1 to 2 seconds, it's going to be kind of tough for you to retrieve that long gun in your vehicle. Trust me. Now, the next fact I really like. Concealed carry laws are dropping crime rates across the country. And there's been a comprehensive study that's been done since 96 showing that violent crime in every state that issues concealed carry laws, violent crime has plummeted. States that pass concealed carry reduce the murder rate by 8.5%. They reduce rapes by 5%. They reduce aggravated assaults by 7%. And robbery by 3%. So, how do you argue with these facts? To all you gun haters out there, how do you argue? Somebody please. You know what? I want to extend an invitation right now to gun haters out there. Here's an invitation. I'm not going to do anything to you. I'm not going to trash you on my blog. If you take me up on this, I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to let your comments be posted and be seen for everybody on the internet. But all you gun haters out there, everybody that thinks that gun control is a good thing, you give me your side of the story based on this fact that I just shared with you. That murder is down 8.5%, that rapes are down 5%, aggravated assaults are down 7%, and robberies down 3% since 1996 in states that allow concealed carry. You tell me. You give me your side of the story, gun haters, and you tell me why we should outlaw concealed carry, because there seems to be a lot of people out there who still think that we should outlaw that, and even our illustrious president has made hints when he was a candidate that concealed carry should be made illegal. So come on, folks, send me some feedback. Give me your side of the story. How else do you explain this drop in crime in the states that allow concealed carry? Now, here's another fact, and this one is, in my opinion, the best one that I've covered in this whole show so far. If the states not having concealed carry laws had adopted the laws back in 92, so going back to all the way to 92, if the states that didn't immediately adopt concealed carry, if they would have given citizens that right, approximately 1,570 murders would have been avoided. 4,177 rapes would have been avoided. 60,000 aggravated assaults could have been prevented. And 11,000 robberies would have been avoided. And that's just basically, they got that from extrapolating the statistics where the crime has gone down in states that do allow concealed carry over the approximate time period. That's what they estimate has been perpetrated against law-abiding citizens, because they didn't have the right to defend themselves and keep a gun on them when they're in public. Now, since we're on the subject of states, let's talk a little bit about Vermont. Vermont is one of the five safest states in the country. In Vermont, citizens can carry a firearm without getting permission, without paying a fee, without having to have a license, and without having to go through any kind of a government-imposed waiting period. And for 10 years in a row, Vermont has remained one of the top five safest states in the country. How do you explain that? Let's talk about Florida. Concealed carry has helped slash murder rates in that state. In 15 years following the passage of Florida's concealed carry law, which, by the way, they passed that back in 1987, they've issued over 800,000 permits to carry firearms. And the FBI reports show that the homicide rate in Florida, which in 87 was higher than the national average, the homicide rate fell 52% for 15 years after issuing concealed carry. And now Florida is below the national average. Now, another message to gun haters out there. They like to use the argument, well, firearms are going to really result in a lot of chaos. It's going to turn people into mad people walking the streets, and this is going to turn into the Wild West again. Really? Well, consider Florida, the Sunshine State. Okay? In Florida, you're much more likely to be attacked by an alligator than to be assaulted by a concealed carry holder. During the first 15 years that Florida's concealed carry law was in effect, alligator attacks outpaced the number of crimes committed by carry holders by a 229 to 155 margin. Folks, the alligators are much more mean than the people walking around with Glocks and 1911s on their hip. And even those 155 crimes that were committed by concealed carry holders in Florida, there's a misleading part of that. Most of them resulted in Floridians who accidentally carried their firearms into restricted areas like an airport, which is a crime. So it wasn't even a violent crime. They were carrying their gun where they weren't supposed to, which, come on, boneheads, know the areas, and I mean, know the laws in your area as to where you can conceal. All right? But think about that. The alligators hurt more people than the concealed carry weapons permits did. So come on, folks. If you're going to carry, by the way, know the laws. Know where you can carry and where you can't, so you don't end up like one of these 155 people that committed a crime just because you were carrying where you weren't supposed to. You know what that does? It makes the media point a finger at us. So be smart. Know the laws. Okay, let me tell you about the city of Kennesaw, Georgia. I got a good friend of mine who lives there. In Kennesaw, Georgia, not too far from Atlanta, in 1982, they passed a law requiring heads of households to keep at least one firearm in the house. Isn't that cool? They made it a law saying if you're the head of the house, you got to keep a firearm. The burglary rate dropped 89% in Kennesaw, Georgia after they did that. 10 years later, the residential burglary rate in Kennesaw was still 72% lower than it had been before they passed that law. Now, let's talk about international statistics for a minute. Stats show that burglars in the United States are a lot less likely to burglarize homes than are their counterparts in foreign countries where firearms are not allowed. consider these. Home occupancy rate. Excuse me. Homeowner occupancy rate in the gun control countries of Great Britain, Canada, and the Netherlands is 45%. And homeowner occupancy rate in the United States, 12.7%. Now, what those statistics mean is that's how often a homeowner is typically present, is typically at home when an invasion hits. In Great Britain, Canada, Netherlands, 45% of the time someone's home when someone breaks in. In the United States, 12.7%. Okay, now let's talk about Orlando, Florida. Let's go back to 1966-67. In Orlando, the media highly publicized a safety course, which taught women in Orlando how to use guns. And the result was Orlando's rape rate dropped 88% in 1967, whereas the rape rate remained constant in the rest of the Florida and in the nation. In 1979, the Justice Department under Jimmy Carter found that of more than 32,000 attempted rapes, 32% were actually committed, but when a woman was armed with a gun or knife, only 3% of the attempted rapes were actually successful. And a Justice Department study done in 79 when Carter was president found that 3 out of 5 of the felons polled in this study agreed that a criminal is not going to mess around with a victim he knows is armed with a gun. 74% of those felons that were polled agreed that one reason burglars avoid houses when people are at home is that they fear being shot during the crime. And 57% of those felons polled agreed that criminals are more worried about meeting an armed victim than they are about running into the police. Isn't that interesting? They're more worried about that person in the house with a weapon. So now that I've pretty much bored you with a lot of statistics, hopefully I kind of put them into a meaningful light. Let me just say this. I'm putting a call again out to all you gun haters out there. I've told my side of the story. Now, you know what? I'd like to hear what your side of the story is. So I want to go ahead and challenge you. Find me some statistics out there and go ahead and blow me away, no pun intended. Find some statistics, go ahead and put them on the blog, tell me where things are less safe and why they're less safe, because law-abiding citizens own guns. And the key word there is law-abiding. All right? Don't pepper me with statistics from criminals that are using guns for violence, because criminals are not law-abiding citizens. You show me cases where law-abiding citizens are in more danger because they have a firearm in their possession. And if you want, if I can get enough feedback coming my way on that, I'll be compelled to talk about it on an upcoming show. I got a feeling I know what I'm going to be receiving. But let me conclude with this. In the words of Massad Ayoub, who is a very well-known firearms instructor, if you possess the right to carry a gun, carry it. Carry it with you all the time. You've heard me say this on this show before, and I've mentioned it on my survival show before. What good is a gun that has been left at home if you're out on the street and you're attacked? Carry it. If it's not the kind of gun that you feel comfortable carrying, then get something else. All right? And as much as I hate to sell firearms, if you have a gun, you don't feel like carrying it, it's just not working for you, sell it and get something that is more comfortable or easier or practical for you to carry. The key is have something. The best gun you can have is the one that's in your hand when the shooting starts. Don't be a victim because you were not able to be armed. And, you know, as we talked about in this show, get a handgun and save a life. So thank you for tuning in to Episode 8 of the Handgun World Show. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. And I hope you've been able to get something from these statistics that we just talked about. Once again, thank you for listening. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cup. Thank you, and we'll catch you next time.